Final seconds of the game. A chance to score, and the chance has gone begging. If your business's commerce platform keeps missing the target on golden opportunities, get the MVP you deserve. Get Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool that you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle. Shopify puts you in control of every sales channel. So whether you're selling signed football boots from Shopify's in-person POS system or you're vending vintage shirts on Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform, you are covered. And once you've reached your audience, Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is truly a global force, powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across over 170 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ranks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ranks to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/ranks.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite football podcast, back for another week. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host today. And joining me, as ever, my co-host, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
I'm good, mate. Yeah, I was just thinking, as you said, as ever. Yeah, we do this a lot, don't we? We sit here and chat to each other about football.
It's a great thing. It's a wonderful
life. It's a great thing.
It's
become like one of the most regular parts of my life. Lots of things change, but every Tuesday afternoon, Jack Collins will be sat here. I'll get a little message through on WhatsApp, pop on my laptop, and there he is, ready to chat football again.
It's a wonderful game we play. It's a wonderful life we lead in many different ways. How are you? You well?
I'm okay, mate. Yeah. We're obviously at the business end of the season, unless you're our Fulham team, who are now on the beach season. We've given up.
Me and you were there. They've taken Barbie as gospel. They're just like, my job is just beach. It's just beach.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what? Fair play. They've earned that right in so many ways.
But our boys are done. But there was a league title clinched last night, mate. Inter Milan have done a Scudetto, haven't they? They've got an extra star on their shirt.
Yeah, that every 10 you get in Serie A, you get an extra star on the shirt. So Inter become the second club to have two stars on their shirt. Juventus actually have three. I think they've won 36 league titles.
That's outrageous.
And yeah, it was a lot. Inter have won their 20th last night. Milan stuck on 19. So not only did they surpass their City rivals, they also won the league in a sort of nominal away game at San Siro, which is, I think this might be the perfect way to win a title. Mm. Now, people talk about it, and I know that Arsenal fans always sing about winning the league at White Hart Lane and all of these things, but they effectively won the title at home, but not at home, in a derby, in a really, really sort of mad game that ended with a brawl and three red cards. They're celebrating in front of their own Curva, the Curva Nord, and the Milan sound systems are playing like really heavy techno, so you can't hear anything. So you're getting that kind of sense of, oh, the whole thing's a bit sort of, oh, we're against the odds, we're away from home, but also you're in your own backyard as well. I don't know, I think it might be perfect. I think it might be the dreamiest way to win a title. And considering that, I mean, I know it's been long laid plans and that San Siro is still going for the time being, it does look like that is going to be gone in a couple of years. So to have won it there and in this kind of circumstance, it's the first time ever that a title has been decided via a Derby della Madonnina, which is, you know, interesting considering the dominance of the two teams in parts of Italian football history. So all of that put together, I thought it was just a nice one in many ways. So congratulations to Inter. It also makes it the second league that the bag called early. that
yes.
has fallen in. And two more could fall in this week because Ligue 1 could go with PSG and the Eredivisie could go as well with PSV. I think if PSV win, the head-to-head record means that they win the league, or that might be two results they need. And PSG need to win and hope that Monaco drop points. And they're playing Lille, who are, as we know, a very, very good side. So, yeah, we could have two more done and dusted by the end of the week, mate.
Yeah, well, Leicester City play tonight, Tuesday night, against Southampton. That's the one that the bag is really sweating on, isn't it? I mean, the fact yeah. that you've chosen to go early on the championship title race, which is an outrageous title race. Like, it's been all over the place. And Leicester are top, to be fair.
Leicester was sort of 7 points clear in October when I called this one, I think.
Yeah, and they've got back there, but they're 1 point clear at the top at the moment of Leeds United, who are second. But Ipswich in third are 2 points behind, and they've also got the same number of games as Leicester, so they've got a game in hand on Leeds. It's all very, very tense. Yeah, Leicester, Southampton. As you're looking at this pod, just check the score right now to see if Leicester managed to see off Saints, because that is a massive match.
It's a huge game. Leeds were excellent on Monday night as well. They played Middlesbrough. It was a wild game. Mm. Excellent might be the wrong word. They defended comically at times, but equally going forward has been where Leeds have really struggled of late. And actually to go and score four goals at Borough was very impressive. Somerville, excellent again. Really, really good. A championship player of the season. Bagging two and getting another assist last night. But yeah, Leeds keeping this alive, because if they hadn't won and Leicester had won tonight, pretty sure that would have guaranteed not the title, but automatic promotion for Leicester. So,
oh yeah.
Yeah, it did keep the game alive. The championship is rolling into its final weeks of the season. Obviously, it ends a bit earlier than some of the other big leagues because yeah. of the playoffs and the way that all falls out. So yeah, it's right in crunch time with the championship at the moment. We are the bag is praying that Leicester get the job done and we can have another bag next year. Yeah. But let's move on, shall we? And let's move on to European competition. We're going to discuss all three of the major European competitions today. We're going to discuss the Champions League, the Europa League and the Europa Conference League. Rank the last four in each competition. How likely I think we think they are to win the competition. We're going to start, DJ, with you on the Champions League, and then I'll take over for the Europa Twins after the break.
Yeah, so we're down to the final four in the Champions League, and on Tuesday the 30th of April we'll see Bayern Munich host Real Madrid, and on the Wednesday 1st of May we'll see Borussia Dortmund host Paris Saint-Germain in their first leg. So I'll be ranking these teams 4-1 based on who's going to win the Champions League. And I'll start at number four with Borussia Dortmund, the underdogs of this year's competition. The team you now need to root for if you're totally neutral to this and you would like a beautiful tale to follow and celebrate. Edin Terzic, the manager of Borussia Dortmund, should probably have been sacked by now, to be honest, but he's given himself not only a lifeline, but he could go down as a legend of the club if he can pull this off and actually win the Champions League. You've got Jadon Sancho out on pitch. He's a player that wasn't deemed allowed to even be in the same building as Man United's first team a few months ago. Now he's marching on into a Champions League semi-final, a place that he feels very much loved. Let's remember, right, that Dortmund did already top Group F in the Champions League group stages, the group of death, and that included PSG, their opponents in the next round. Now, that's very good, but they were beaten 2-0 by PSG in the groups, and they drew in a game that, to be honest, PSG should probably have won. So they really are up against it in this game. And look, to be fair, both teams have moved on since, like, that seems like a long, long time ago in football. And it was. Both teams have been on very different journeys since then. And Dortmund at four is the most logical thing to do. I'll admit, Jack, I've got a sneaky feeling Dortmund do actually win the game, but I couldn't find enough reason to move them up the ranking and not be fourth. So Dortmund are in here at fourth, but they should have a level of confidence that breeds hope here. They've obviously just seen off Atletico Madrid in seesaw circumstances where the game was all over the place. But I want Dortmund to prove that they are not just the fourth best team left in this competition. The problem I have is obviously down to trust. We've had this again and again with Borussia Dortmund through the years, but even after they come through that Atleti tie at the weekend, they're leading against Bayer Leverkusen. They have the chance.
They're a little bit unlucky.
But they have the chance to end the run, to stop them from being invincible. And Leverkusen score in the 97th minute. Now, to be fair, Leverkusen always score a late goal. They always find a way to make sure that they are invincible. But I was a little bit like, that's so Dortmund. A corner, a header, it's in. Of course, they didn't manage to see it through. I'll just always have these trust issues. But yeah, it's tough for Borussia Dortmund. They're home in the first leg against Paris Saint-Germain. And they need to make that home leg count. And I'll go on straight away to number three, Jack, because at number three are their opponents, PSG.
Oh, okay. Is this where you've put them? That I have. Interesting. Because, yeah. I mean, I agree with you in that this is sort of the trust issues derby in so many ways, yes. Right? Like Dortmund are Dortmund and this is what they do. They find a way of being able to hurt you when you want them to really, yeah. really pull through. But PSG have had their own major issues in the Champions League, especially at, you know, latter stages of competitions.
Yeah. Yeah, so basically this is the tie that decides who's going to be runners-up for the Champions League, I guess. But it's a really difficult one to judge. I do think it's good for PSG to be away first. I think that will suit them.
Yeah, if this was the other way around, I think I might be with you, but I got to say, maybe we'll talk about it afterwards, but this is too low for me, for PSG.
Look, against Barcelona, it didn't start well for him, but Ousmane Dembele was outrageous, showed the trait that we always knew he had in there somewhere. But, you know, PSG were helped by the fact that Lamine Yamal was taken off in that game. Xavi had a tantrum. Barcelona kind of lost the plot in the game. It all fell apart. And then it ends up with a 4-1 away win, a couple of Mbappe goals, Bosch there into a semi-final. Now, I can see the first leg being a draw. Like that would be my prediction for the first leg. And then it comes down very much to PSG doing the business in the second leg at home. And then do I see him going any further than that, Jack? Honestly, I do find it hard to believe that this is the PSG team that goes on to now win the Champions League after all the iterations we've seen of PSG through the years. If they go on to play Real Madrid, then obviously there's this weird narrative where Mbappe will be playing for PSG against Madrid, could win it for PSG to then go on and sign for Real Madrid a few days later. So
a Mario Götze conundrum, isn't it? From Borussia Dortmund, Bayern Munich all those years ago.
Exactly. So it's a great narrative, but it's just that. Is it any more than a piece of fiction? For now, it's not, mate. The football gods are telling me that PSG just don't know how to win this competition, and I'm listening to them. I'm saying, yeah, I think you're right. I can't see these lads rocking up in London and then parading through Trafalgar Square with the trophy held aloft. I can't see it. The only thing that I think changes a little bit is Luis Enrique. He might be the factor. He might be the factor that proves me wrong here. This guy is smart as they come. I mean, when you look at all the bosses that are left in this competition, it's Edin Terzic feels very much the odd man out, I have to say. And Luis Enrique, that power might be another factor that gets him past Borussia Dortmund in the semi-final. And if they are to lift this trophy, then the Enrique factor is going to be key.
Yeah, I mean, this is the big one for me. And I think this is why I'd have PSG second. I think that whilst you're right in that there is that kind of niggling feeling that PSG could implode. And I think the loss to Barcelona at home showcased some of the weak spots in this PSG team. The way that they turn this around, and yes, okay, fine. There's a red card. They force the red card because Bradley Barcola gets in behind and they know how to exploit those kind of weaknesses. I think this midfield is as good as almost any in Europe. And the way that Vitinha is playing football right now, and look, isn't going to be no surprise to long-term listeners that I'm going to sit here and sing Vitinha's praises, but I think he's just such a wonderful footballer. And the way he is being utilized by Lucho in this PSG team is getting the best out of him. They have Warren Zaire-Emery, who's another of Europe's brightest stars in the midfield. They can kind of stiffen that up with the likes of Fabian Ruiz, not necessarily in terms of defensive sense, but in terms of, you know, having that experience and having played at the top level. They have Manuel Ugarte, who was one of the best defensive midfielders, I think, across the planet when he was knocking around at Sporting. And there was a reason that PSG invested quite a lot of money to buy him last summer. The balance of this team feels like it's getting into the right kind of spaces. And I actually think the depth that they have, the quality that they have, means that if they get into a one-off shootout in this final, that would surprise me far less than Bayern winning it. So I'm going to say that I would have PSG at two. I think that the thing, as you say, the first leg being at the Westfalenstadion and not at the Parc des Princes is massive, because I think we're coming back to Dortmund, that there's something about that place. You know, there's that mythical element of what it can do. I think without that in the bag, I struggle to see Dortmund getting past PSG. And I think this iteration of PSG has got stronger and stronger through the course of the season. It's not as reliant on individual talent as it was before, and yet still finds ways to allow that individual talent to shine.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
I've got a funny feeling this could be PSG's year.
No, it won't be. Number two is Bayern Munich. Yeah, they're home to Madrid, first of all. This is the game on Tuesday. It's obviously a must watch. And Thomas Tuchel, we have to remember, can still pull off the best game plans in the world, especially in a one-off game. And this is what we have to remember. We should also remember that this is a man on the lookout for his next job. A man that is trying to salvage his reputation is probably a bit of a stretch. But given the way things happened for him at Chelsea and the way it ended, given the way that this is ending at Bayern Munich, it's going to hurt. It's going to sting. And to leave Bayern Munich now, with a Champions League trophy under his arm, looking for a new club, it's certainly going to help him make sure he gets a good job. But yeah, he's had success in the past in this competition when you wouldn't have expected it necessarily. And I don't know, mate, the fact that he's on his last legs here at Bayern, quite literally, because it is his last hurrah, makes me wonder if he could pull off something special. But you know, I've stuck him in at number two. The approach to the first leg is important. And if they are to win overall, I mean, I know it's easy to say, but they probably do need to win this home leg before they go off to the Bernabeu. The home leg is important, though, because in the Bundesliga this season, Bayern have won 12 of their 15 home games. And in the Champions League, they've played 5 home games and they've won 4 of them. They're pretty big wins as well. Man United, Galatasaray, Lazio, Arsenal. They're pretty significant wins, especially the manner that they've had to achieve them. The other game they didn't win was a 0-0 with Copenhagen, which didn't really matter. It's the away side of this that I do fear for in Bayern. They've had some big defeats and some unexpected defeats this season away from home, including a loss away to Lazio, which in the end didn't matter. But they did lose in the last 16 first leg. And in the Bundesliga, they've lost at some weird places. Heidenheim, Bochum, Leverkusen.
Heidenheim are great at home, man.
Frankfurt. They've also conceded 26 goals on the road in the Bundesliga, which doesn't sound that bad. But when you compare it to everybody else, it's really not that good. And in fact, Cologne, who was second to bottom in the league, have only conceded one more goal than that. So that's a bit weird. They're playing against Real Madrid. So
yeah.
We've seen here a very difficult season overall. They've obviously been under a lot of pressure. There's been a lot of judgment around this team. Maybe they use this as the reason that they do win the tournament, because they're not winning the Bundesliga for the first time in 126 years. Maybe they do go and win the Champions League this season. But Madrid have lost one game all season in La Liga, and they are a better team than them. I think when you consider what Bayern are going to have to do here, they can take some lessons from that Man City-Real Madrid game. And let's be honest, like, Man City could, probably should, be in the semi-finals. But if you look back at it, what was the area, what was the thing that Real Madrid struggled with? And City really, for quite a bit of the game, did try to target like the right back area of Real Madrid. That just that right side generally. Like there was a lot of play going in there. And whether it was Grealish or later in the game it was Doku, that became kind of their best route to go. And what was also quite clear was that being direct against Real Madrid, forcing your way through, dribbling through those spaces, was going to try to force something, right? And Bayern, to be fair, that is one of their great strengths. They do have players in those wide areas that can exploit Real Madrid's potential weakness.
Yeah, you say potential weakness, though. And actually, you know, obviously it was Dani Carvajal for, you know, the first part of that game, and then it became Lucas Vázquez. You might be forgetting that Lucas Vázquez turned into prime Cafu in the Clásico at the weekend. Like, as good a right-back performance as you'll see for a long, long time. It was brilliant at both ends of the pitch. And whilst I appreciate it, and I think obviously you're right, there's no part of me that sees Bayern winning against Real Madrid. And even if they were to win that game, there's no part of me that sees that Bayern would beat PSG in the final. I just don't think they're as cohesive a whole as either of those two teams. And I think when we're coming to this point, and yes, obviously you could argue that Arsenal feel more cohesive, but I think that there is a sense of, you know, dread, or not dread, but, you know, that was a new Arsenal team coming to this point in the competition. They haven't yet learned from the mistakes. I think with PSG, you're starting to see mistakes being learned from. You're starting to see them put right some of the wrongs of the past. And I think them basically dropping a reverse remontada on Barcelona with Barcelona's old remontada coach is something to be like, okay, are they starting to see the light here? And Enrique, I think, was a brilliant managerial choice for them. If it came down to a game between Bayern Munich and PSG in the final, I would be backing PSG.
Well, it won't. And
no, I mean, there's no argument to say that Real Madrid aren't top of this, is there? Like, it doesn't make sense. I don't think Real Madrid are the best version of Real Madrid that we've seen in a couple of years, and yet they've just knocked out, you know, the team I considered to be the best team in the world right now. They have shown no signs of slowing down, and also I think wrapping up the title at the weekend against Barcelona is going to play them in really good stead. If you are Bayern, you are praying for a Barcelona win in El Clasico, because it means that there is still that little bit of heat on at the, you know, in La Liga. There is still that sense that maybe something could happen, and Real Madrid need to be alert and on, you know, at full strength in order to make sure that they assert themselves to win that title. Without that to worry about, Ancelotti can rotate 11 players between these two legs.
Absolutely, yeah. Look, your Champions League winners for 2024 are very likely to be Real Madrid. They've just beaten Manchester City, the best team in the world, as you said. They have a sense of belief and purpose. And as I said before, I do really like the fact that they are at home in the second leg at the new Bernabeu. Go back to that City game and look, it wasn't vintage from them in the second leg by any stretch of the imagination. But it was quite interesting what they tried to do. We basically saw a 4-2-4 in the early stages of the game, and they were trying to force Man City into wide areas of the pitch so that they couldn't allow that extra man in the midfield to be utilised properly. And obviously, like, City turned the middle of the pitch into that box shape, and we know that, and that's where they look to have an area of dominance and to out-muscle teams. And Madrid worked quite hard to stop that from being the case. And they did that by getting basically a four-man attack that would push onto the men and force them to play it wide. It was quite risky, and it nearly didn't work, but it did just about. And later in the game, they couldn't maintain that tactic throughout. And by the end, we were basically seeing man-for-man tactics employed. But City still could not get the ball into the areas that they wanted. And Madrid did continue to force them wide. And they continued to force City to cross the ball in ways that they don't really want to, which is ways that they would normally be able to resist. And they couldn't. In modern football, we do get heart eyes about elegant football, and we love to see the way that Man City play, but the pretty stuff doesn't always bring the big rewards.
You're preaching to the choir here, aren't you?
Look, Real are ruthless. They're dangerous in transition. And we've seen this time and time again. Bellingham said after that game, they play off the cuff. And I can't get this out of my head. It's astonishing that they are actually able to do that. And I believe him. I don't believe like it's literally off the cuff all the time that they're making up their movements. But it does definitely hold some weight when you see the structure of the side and the fact that their attacking plays come from moments like that one when Bellingham plucked the ball out of the air with that exquisite touch. It's not planned. It's pretty remarkable, but it's also game-changing. And then they also have this resilience. And that's not luck. It's not luck that they didn't cave in against Man City. Perhaps it's luck that Kevin De Bruyne stuck the other big chance over the bar. But away from that, there is a sense of real defensive organisation and a plan of sorts and reliability on your goalkeeper and the men in front of him, cancelling out someone like Erling Haaland. And well, they need to replicate that here, and they have to do it against Harry Kane, who's a better player than Erling Haaland. He scored 40 goals this season for Bayern Munich. But this is Real Madrid's competition. They are the kings of the Champions League. Carlo Ancelotti has been involved in 200 Champions League matches, and five of them are Champions League finals. He has no fear of any occasion. He's not worried about his reputation. He's not worried about judgments against him. He trusts his team to play through the difficult moments. He is relaxed. It's so difficult to see Real Madrid not winning this competition.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. It does feel...
Sorry that was predictable.
I mean, there is a sense of predictability about it at this stage, though, because this is what they do. And, you know, I don't think you'll find many people on the planet who will have looked at that Real Madrid-Manchester City game and thought the winner of this competition is not coming out of this tie. And, you know, obviously things can happen. It's the Champions League. It's knockout football. Upsets can happen. You know, changes can happen. Lots of things can happen that can throw things off. But the logical, sensible thing to kind of back here is the idea that the Real Madrid win it, right? That's where we're at. And I think that not all these predictions come from country, and they're definitely not all three competitions. We're not going to call them all right. But there is a sense that when it gets to this stage of the competition, you have to lean on the things that you know in order to predict it. And I thought that looking at the way that the Real Madrid were able to shut down City in these right areas and actually the defensive effort that they put in, and then to go and spring that final blow at the Clasico at the weekend off the back of it, right? When Real Madrid, at times in that game, looks absolutely shattered. They looked dead on their feet, and they found a way to get the ball to Bellingham in the final moments for him to score another Clasico winner and to basically call game on the title race, if they hadn't already, you know, very much the kind of defining moment. So I think to say anything apart from Real Madrid are the favourites to win it here would be disingenuous.
Yeah, I guess that's part of it. I mean, I've said this, if anyone has listened to the Champions League takeaway shows, I've probably been saying it since the beginning of the season that Madrid are going to win the competition. So I guess this was no surprise that I'm back here. But there's more and more proof that it's going to come true. And yeah, it's going to be a big shock if they exit the competition.
Or anywhere.
Anywhere. Ever again. I mean, ever again. Yeah. If they don't win this competition 1 year, I'll be shocked.
Yeah, I mean, it is starting to get to feel like that, isn't it? And
yeah, I mean, look, next season, you add Mbappe into this, you add Endrick into this, you know, it's a little...
Maybe balance off. You never know.
Like, maybe.
Right now, it all feels very Los Blancos, and I think that it'd be hard to say anything else. All right, we will leave the Champions League there. After the break, we're talking about the Europa League and the Europa Conference League. Don't go anywhere.
Welcome back to Ranks FC. Yes, it's Dean talking, and that means there's a Jack ranking coming. It's the king of the Europa, Jack Collins, whether it's the Europa League, whether it's the Europa Conference, whether it's something else that the Europas produce in the coming years. Jack Collins will be the only expert you need, and he's going to run
for
us through
fourth tier European competition.
I was going to say, well, I'm trying to think of a name of it, then the Europa National League or something. but yeah, this is yours, mate. This is your cup of tea. This is what you live for. You'll be at every game somehow simultaneously because it's yours, mate.
Well, I mean, look, I might just change my name on Twitter to like Radio Europa or something. It does, mate, does feel like the brand is the brand.
Just get
there,
a burner that you do that on, mate. Yeah.
100%. 100%. All right, let's start with the Europa League, shall we? And the four teams left are Roma and Marseille, Atalanta and Leverkusen. Roma will be playing Leverkusen, Atalanta will be playing Marseille. And it is the French side who I've got at fourth. If Marseille were at home second in the semi-finals, they might have gone higher up this list. But I think with the second leg in Bergamo, they have it all to do. And being perfectly honest with you, the past few weeks have been pretty uncomfortable watching from a Marseille perspective. Yes, they obviously squeezed past Benfica on penalties, but Benfica are a bit of a mess of their own right now. And Marseille's recent form does not make for happy reading. They had a massive bounce, right, after they appointed Jean-Louis Gasset as the new manager. And it looked for a second like all things were going to be roses and that he was the kind of manager that could manage a club that has as much madness within its kind of hold as Marseille do. But they had five losses in a row in March and early April. It set them back big style in Ligue 1. And it also nearly got them eliminated from this competition on two separate occasions against teams that I think a team of this quality should be beating. All right, Benfica, Marseille was a pretty even game, but considering they went down 2-1 after the first day, they got that goal, kind of expected them to get it done, and they needed penalties to see it through. Lyon in the league, who at one point looked like relegation candidates, have climbed above Marseille in the league table. And whilst Marseille are still not miles off the European conversation, I don't think you're going to find many people at the club who support the club who will tell you that this season is anything less than a pretty drastic failure, I think, considering where things looked like they might be going over the last few weeks. Now, they have a few things in their locker, notably Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who is not only the top scorer in this year's Europa League, but the top scorer in the Europa League ever. So we're talking about a man who knows how to do it on this stage. But I just think that the way they've performed, the way they've played, and it's not like they've been having some decent performances and falling off it. You know, they've won 4-0 against Villarreal in the first leg of their round 16 game, and then nearly threw it away against a Villarreal side who, yes, are better than they were earlier on in the season, but have really struggled to, you know, to replicate any sort of consistent performance over the course of this season. Marseille nearly threw that away. They nearly threw away a real opportunity against Benfica to reach this semi-final as well. They're throwing away, it looks like, their attempts to get back into European competition next year. And just generally, the entire vibe around the place has gone from a real high point, I think, at the start of March to one where it's like, oh, this again, is it? And at one point it was like, all right, Gasset has come in here to do a job, to fill a term. And it was like, well, he's going to have to get the job permanently. He's going to have to go on and be the manager for the next couple of years. And now it's like, no, they might have to look for another manager in the summer again. And look, Marseille eats up managers, right? As a place, it just seems to gobble them up and chew them up and spit them out. And that's fine. The club is a bit of a kind of maelstrom at the best of times. But I just feel like that gives you a moment. And against Atalanta, who I'll come on to, you know, I can't see them over the course of two legs winning that tie, especially being at home first.
Yeah, I mean, what I find bizarre about Marseille is the streaks that they go through. Starting from Jan, they went through a 7-game winless streak. And then at the end of
Feb, got fired.
Yeah. And then the end of Feb, they shot themselves into a 5-game win streak. So they bounced back from that by winning 5 on the bounce. Then they suffered 5 successive defeats in a row. And then somehow won the second leg against Benfica to make it into these Europa League semifinals. And at the weekend, they drew to Toulouse. So I have no idea what streak we're coming into right now. Is this one of the winless streaks? Are we about to see it? Because if they do hit another winless streak, and if it's a 7-gamer, then they're setting themselves up perfectly for glory.
Well, maybe. But I can't see it. I really can't. I don't think that there feels like the right kind of vibe around the place. And look, I suppose that you could argue that a big win and everything can change, a couple of wins in the league and everything can change. But I just feel like over the course of all of it, they feel like the weakest team left in the competition. And I actually, I would go so far to say by some distance, whereas, you know, the other three, I think, or the other two in the middle, at least, don't have loads between them. But it takes me on to three, which is where I've put Roma. Now, Roma have lost just twice under Daniele De Rossi, although one of them was on Monday night. And it looks like a relatively clean bill of health is something that the Roma fans can hang on to, right? Obviously, Evan Ndika collapsed in that Udinese game, was flown to hospital. He is not going to be back this season. And we wish him all the best, but he is not going to be playing again. But apart from that, Tammy Abraham has recovered from his ACL injury. He played on Monday against Bologna. He looked very rusty. Apart from that, everyone seems to be fit. Dybala seems to be getting through the rest of the season. Romelu Lukaku was probably knackered after that Milan game where he spent the entire time bullying Matteo Gabbia. But you know, he comes back into this and we know what his record is like in the Europa League and how good he is here. This is a good Roma squad and they have the basis, I think, of what they did under Mourinho, obviously winning the Conference League, getting to the Europa League final last year, losing on penalties, being denied that penalty shootout, or denied that penalty late on in the game, which for red card that led to all sorts of shenanigans. It just did feel like there was a good base here. And the fact that Mourinho left and De Rossi came in, and look, I think that this is more of a compliment to Jose Mourinho than anyone else, but the foundations are really strong. And De Rossi came in and just maybe just opened up the tap a little bit more and went, all right, let's have a little bit more from all of you. Let's have a little bit more faith in our ability going forward. Let's try and blow teams out of the water when the opportunity becomes available. And it worked really nicely. But on Monday against Bologna, and yes, you have to take into account that obviously they played on Thursday night. Bologna had an extended break and they're two sides competing at the same level in Serie A this season. But Bologna were by far the better side. And it worries me that Roma have Leverkusen, who obviously are on their own sensational run. And I think with the Europa League, I tried to make this a little bit like who's playing who. I don't think there's loads between Atalanta and Roma in terms of where they are. And Atalanta are in at two here. But I think that Atalanta will beat Marseille, whereas I don't think that Roma will beat Leverkusen, and therefore I've put them in below them. And that's what I've got to. And it, you know, look, Atalanta have just had one of the most famous two-legged wins they will ever have, right? And that's a result that will kind of echo across the history of this football club. Their performance at Anfield was sensational. And part of me is starting to think that Atalanta are really built, not specifically for European or knockout football, but actually for Europa League football. Oh. And there is a sense, I think, around Atalanta, the way that they play, the depth that they have, and the chaos that Gasperini is willing to unleash can sometimes blow teams away. And they've faced a really difficult path to get here. They faced a Sporting team under Ruben Amorim, who are absolutely sensational. They have faced a Liverpool side that at that point was still competing for three trophies. And they have beaten both of them relatively convincingly. And I think you look at the Sporting game and some will be like, well, it wasn't that convincing. It was. They were the better side. And to be honest, they shouldn't have come away from Lisbon with anything less than a win under their belts. They did. It's got the job done in Bergamo. But the performances in these games are starting to make me buy into this Atalanta hype. And when you kind of look at what they have available to them, the players that are around in this team and the players that can make a difference, you start to look at this Atalanta side and thinking, okay, right, if there are certain players absent or if someone isn't having a good game, who steps in? And they played against Monza at the weekend. They were quite good. Not brilliant, but quite good. They won 2-1. They were 2-0 up until the 90th minute, which is fine. But El Bilal Touré played up front instead of Scamacca. Scamacca didn't even come off the bench, right? They gave him a rest. Ademola Lookman and Shah de Ketelara played fine, but they rested 10 Cote Miners. Alexei Moranchuk didn't come off the bench either. Behind them, they played Pasalic and Edison in massive demand in terms of the kind of player he is, a very, very interesting number six. But Martin Deron came off the bench to do a job in there as well. They rotated their fullbacks. Holman Bakker played, and they gave Davide Zabacosta, who's having a renaissance in Bergamo, a rest. They brought Hans Hatterborough off the bench. We've seen Ruggeri play at points at left back, who's another player I really like. And then at centre back, Kolasinac played on one side of Isaac Hien, who I sang the praises of on last Friday's show with his performance against Liverpool. I thought it was sensational. And Raphael Toloi brings a bit of experience in there. They've also still got Brad Jim City coming off the bench there. A couple of youngsters coming through who are also very, very talented. They even rotated the keeper. Juan Musso had a rest. Karnaseki came in. Two very, very high-level goalkeepers. And I'm just looking at this squad and thinking, yeah, all right, they have not only the ability to beat teams and beat teams in various different ways, but actually also the ability to rotate really heavily as they continue to battle for a European spot in Serie A, whilst being able to allow this amount of talent on the pitch to thrive. And I think that Gasperini is one of the most unheralded, unsung coaches across Europe. He has done a stunning job with this Atalanta side. He has taken them to constant European challenges, to a team that are always there or thereabouts in the European places in Serie A. What he's transformed this team into, whilst not straying away from his style of football that is incredibly enjoyable to watch, but also allows his attacking players to thrive, I think is magnificent. It's truly quite remarkable. And I'm going to go so far to say that I think that Atalanta have a real shot winning this.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, Atalanta by Leverkusen, I think, is the final that we want to see as neutrals. The fact it's being played in Dublin, I mean, this is you, mate. Atalanta playing Bayer Leverkusen in Dublin. That is a Jack final that I hope you get to go to.
So do I. But
yeah, Gasperini up against Xabi Alonso too is a great matchup to end the season.
Yeah, I would like that very much. I mean, it leaves us with Leverkusen at number one. And again, slightly like the sense of the Champions League and probably like the sense of the Conference League to come, this is the predictable, but it's also the sensible and reasonable answer. This is a team that have not lost this season. Now, they've come close on a number of occasions, notably, I think, in the Europa League across those two ties against Karabag. And West Ham put them under real cosh in the first half of the second leg of their quarterfinal as well. And I think that there is a sense that, you know, amongst West Ham fans that maybe they gave Leverkusen too much respect in the first leg. And actually, the way that they built this entire thing up could have been challenged. Dortmund, obviously, we spoke about earlier on, gave them a really good game at the weekend as well. But they keep finding a way. And just like we talked about Real Madrid, you know, and the Champions League and the way that just somehow they find something to make it work, it feels similar with this Bayer Leverkusen team. And Xabi Alonso has been pretty loose with his rotations in recent weeks. We've started to see a lot more rotation within the squad as they started to build into this final third. And especially after winning the league, the rotations ahead of that West Ham game felt like they, you know, were just trying to get through the first half so they could bring the kind of big guns on in the second and make do with it. And I just think that as they get towards them with the Bundesliga now out of the way, now obviously they still have to battle if they want to complete an unbeaten season, which would be a truly quite sensational feat. But generally, they can start to divert their attentions, I think, towards other things now at this point, because as much as an unbeaten season would be remarkable, would it be better to win a treble? Yeah, it would. Yeah, it would. It's as simple as that. And I think that they will look at themselves, obviously, as favourites in the DFB Pokal, but also as favourites in this competition, given the struggles that the rest of these teams have had throughout the season. You know, it hasn't been a perfect campaign for Atalanta, definitely hasn't been a perfect campaign for Roma or Marseille, both of whom changed managers in the middle of the season. They will be looking at this and thinking, we are the strongest team left in this competition, and if we play to capacity, we should win this. We should win the Europa League in Dublin. And I find it hard to look at them and think that if they, as long as nothing goes dreadfully wrong, we don't see a massive injury to someone like a Florian Wirtz or a Granit Xhaka, who have been so key, the two of them, to the midfield and the way that this team operate, I feel it's going to take something pretty out of the ordinary to stop this Leverkusen side. And that means that it would be unfair to put them anywhere but top of this ranking.
Yeah, I mean, it's especially that factor that this team just don't know when they're beaten, do they? I mean, you've only got to look across recent games when we've seen them really go up against it, whether it was Dortmund at the weekend who thought they'd beaten them, whether it was the West Ham game where you thought it was getting late on and then Frimpong pops up with a deflected goal in the 89th minute. What was that other game? I'm thinking of one recently when they turned it around. Oh, Hoffenheim, when they were home to Hoffenheim. They were 1-0 down, 3 minutes left. Andrick scores with 2 minutes left, and then Schick scores in the first minute of injury time. It's another crazy Leverkusen win. Obviously, Schick's come up with multiple goals in those circumstances. But recently, other players have cropped up too. They've all got that belief that they're never beaten. They all refuse to be beaten. And, you know, I've watched football long enough to know what that counts for. And for no matter how good Atalanta are, technically, have they got that same mindset? Have they got the capability to pull themselves through in moments like that? And I mean, the plain answer is probably no, because they do get beaten. Like, even this month alone, they've lost three games this month alone, because they lost to Liverpool, even though it didn't matter in the end. They did lose that game. They've lost to Cagliari. They've lost to Fiorentina. And that does count for a lot. And
I mean, not even the Hellas Verona game where they were 2-0 up, you know, they ended up drawing the game 2-2. Yeah, there are chinks in the armor, 100%. And I think that whilst Leverkusen have showed maybe they're a slightly more vulnerable team than they looked maybe around the turn of Christmas time, it still feels like they will find a way. And that's why they sit top of the ranking.
Absolutely. So there we go. So the Champions League is going to Spain. The Europa League is going to Germany. Where's the Conference League going?
Well, at four, I've gone with Olympiacos. And it feels a bit harsh because I actually really like this Olympiacos side. They're a funny old unit, but they have a real Portuguese flavour to them as well. And now David Carmo came in from Porto on loan earlier on in the season. Club captain Keane is a veteran Portuguese footballer. Andre Horta's on loan from Braga. Chiquinho used to play for Benfica. Daniel Podence, Portuguese international. Gelson Martins spent a long time at Sporting. Fran Navarro did great stuff with Gil Vicente and then went to Porto and it just didn't really work. And that's sort of touching the top of the iceberg, to be perfectly honest with you. Ruben Vezos there, João Carvalho's there. It does feel like a team built in Portugal, which is a little bit mad in many ways, with a Spanish manager in José Luis Mendilibar, who won the Europa League last year. So in terms of, you know, what we like about this team, there's loads to like, right? There's a lot of really talented footballers here, and that isn't even going into Retsos, who I think is a wonderful centre-back, the Greek international Vicente Abora, who's obviously a bit of an old head around these parts now, but another good footballer, and Omar Richards, who I'm not quite sure how he's ended up here, but he has. So it's, you know, this is a good Olympiacos side, and they've had some really good results in recent weeks. They're still in the title race in Greece, had a big win over PAOK recently. Just to kind of keep themselves in that conversation, they need to win the game that they currently have in hand in the playoffs to keep themselves abreast. But, you know, they feel like they're growing into this season. And the win against Fenerbahce in the last round was really impressive. Yes, it went down to penalties. But to go there with a slender advantage to that stadium and see it out in the way that they did, I thought was pretty remarkable. So this isn't to say that Olympiacos are a bad side. I just think that their draw against Aston Villa is about as bad as they could go. Now, there's a flip to this, which is obviously the first leg is at Villa Park, which means that Olympiacos will have this opportunity to take things back to Greece, knowing that a place in the final in Athens is on the line if they can win the tie after whatever the score is after that first leg. So there's a major kind of incentive in that regard. Two managers here in Emery and Mendilibar, who have both won European competition and both have, you know, that sense of been there and done it about them. And I think that there are players here who can really, you know, make things happen. And, you know, the Olympiacos win, I thought, was interesting in that they left a few of the big guns on the bench against PAOK, and they were still able to grind out a big, big result there. Santiago Hesse didn't play, El Ayoubi didn't play. Some really good footballers who didn't get a nod here and still managing to find a way. And I think that, given the way the last few games have gone, we're starting to see Olympiacos find a rhythm and a rhyme that's kind of all been kicked off by that ridiculous win against Maccabi Tel Aviv, where they were 4-1 down after the first leg of their round of 16. And they win 6-1 away from home after extra time to do that. They then go and they beat Aris 3-0. They beat Lamia 5-1. They win against Fenerbahce. They were 3-0 up in that game, and the defensive vulnerabilities that allowed Fener to get back into it are probably why they're bottom of this list and why I can't see them just about taking Villa. But I think that it feels, you know, when you put someone four, it almost sounds like you're being like, no chance whatsoever. I do really like this Olympiacos side. I just don't necessarily think that they have what it takes to undo an Unai Emery Villa. So
yeah,
that's why they're bottom.
A tough tie.
Yeah, it's a tough tie for them. It's a tough tie for them. But 3 and 2 is where I've really struggled, Dean. I'll be honest. This is where I've really struggled to put teams because Fiorentina were obviously finalists last year, lost to West Ham. They played Club Brugge, and there's a real sense here of like, to be honest, Olympiacos, Club Brugge, Fiorentina, not loads between them, I don't think. And when you're kind of looking at, you know, who was the best seed left in the division or the best team left in the competition ahead of the last round that wasn't Aston Villa, I think the answer was Lille. So you got to that point now. But I was looking at Fiorentina and thinking, right, they'll probably come second. But I'm going to sit here in a Fiorentina shirt and say that Fiorentina are at 3. Because I was going to put them at 2 on vibes as much as merit, in that I think getting to the final last year probably puts them in a mindset that they can do it again. But I think they were a much better team on the whole last year. This season's been dogged by a massive wastefulness in front of goal, injuries to key players that have crippled their ability to take chances at key moments. There's a reason that they're off the pace in the European conversation in Serie A, even in a year where Napoli and Lazio have both struggled. They are starting to find perhaps a little bit of form at the right time. They've lost now just one of their last 6, which was a narrow 1-0 loss to Juve. They won 2 on the bounce ahead of the Coppa Italia semi-final second leg, which is later on this week against Atalanta. But a lot of this game and how it pans out, I think probably hangs on the fitness of a couple of crucial players for Fiorentina, right? Nico Gonzalez and Lucas Beltran, the Argentine pair, have missed the last few games. And whilst Beltran's had only an okay first season as Arthur Cabral's replacement, Gonzalez feels like certainly Fiorentina's most dangerous attacking threat, if not their best player altogether. They've missed him dearly when he's been absent across this campaign. Jack Bonaventura has missed the last couple of games as well with an injury. So it does feel like Fiorentina are in that space where if everything isn't perfect, things aren't necessarily going their way. Now, I think it would be a shock if they went out to Club Brugge. I think it'd be a shock to the system for this entire team. But looking at it and kind of looking at the way that these pan out, and I think the fact that the second leg is in Bruges, I've got a funny feeling that Bruges actually are the team that get to the final. Uh-huh. And that's why I'm putting them at 2, right? Because there's some really interesting players in this Bruges unit. We've spoken about Igor Thiago before, who Brentford have signed as an Ivan Toney replacement for next season. And look, while his record from the penalty spot won't match up to Tony's, there are definite aspects of his game that I think will translate quite nicely to the Premier League. His strike partner, sometimes rotator, interests me just as much. So Ferran Yukla, who came through at Espanyol's academy, had a brief spell with Barcelona. He's been quietly sort of doing the business in Belgium ever since he arrived. He scored both goals in their second leg victory at PAOK. And I'll be honest with you, I really thought Bruges would struggle against PAOK, especially in the second leg in Thessaloniki. Especially given that they just changed managers a few weeks beforehand after some really disappointing results in the league have left them a long way off the pace of Union Saint-Gilloise and even Anderlecht in second. Jukla's a really good footballer, man. I like him a lot. He's got 25 odd goals in 86 appearances, I think. But they're not numbers that are going to set the world alight. But he does a lot of really good work off the ball. He's quite positionally versatile. He can play across the front line if the system requires it. I think there's a player in there, and I think that someone's going to take a gamble on him at some point because his overall game is really smart. But you come into form, and despite Club Brugge's league position, the results since their managerial change have been really encouraging, right? They beat PAOK in both legs. They beat Anderlecht and USG away from home in the league. They've been tactically flexible. They've switched systems to combat the strengths of their opponents. And then they have Antonio Nusa, who, yes, I think he's an absolute superstar in the making. I don't think there's much doubt that he's going right to the top. He's being trapped by almost every top club in Europe. And yes, whilst there's some concerns about injury, on his day, he's such an incredibly explosive player to have in the mix. A glorious one-on-one footballer with the ability to leave defenders in, you know, piles of their own making on the floor. And the spine of this team is strong too. Hans Vaneken's an old head at this now. And yes, he's not the most physically accomplished player in the world, but his ability to create from deeper positions is really important to this Bruges side. While Hugo Vetlesen is another Norwegian who I think we've seen rise through the ranks here to become a key part of this midfield. Between them, they can unpick most locks. And behind them, they have Rafael Onyedika, you'll know is, again, another one linked to a lot of different clubs, emerging as a serious talent. And he locks things down behind them. And then if all else fails, they can turn to Eder Balanta, who's 31, Colombian international, very experienced head, to back him up. The defence is less heralded, and it's not these names that, you know, you're seeing linked to Premier League clubs, to Serie A clubs, to La Liga clubs, but it's still quite an exciting mix of youth and talent. And the freedom that the club seems to be playing with after Nicky Hyen took over from Rolly Dyla has produced some really impressive results defensively. You know, these have been tough games and they've conceded just 3 goals in the 6 matches played since he's been in the dugout. They've won 5 and they've drawn 1 and they've been really, really good at home. So I'm going to say that I fancy Club Bruges to get through ahead of Fiorentina. Now, I hope I'm wrong because I have a soft spot for Fiorentina, but I've just got a feeling that how wasteful they've been, how frustrating Fiorentina have been across this season, the Bruges might just get the better of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes sense, mate. I think I don't watch a lot of Club Bruges, but obviously I speak to a lot of people in terms of transfers, and there's 3-4 players in their team that are currently being pursued by big clubs. And yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all if this team continues with that kind of momentum that they've been building up. They're on a nice run of results as well at the moment. But it's just a no-brainer that Aston Villa win this tournament. It's actually, I mean, if Aston Villa don't win this tournament, then that is not just a disappointment. I mean, from a Villa point of view, like, this is such a missed opportunity. You look at, like, today they're announcing that Unai Emery's extending his contract. You're looking at the way that they managed to get to this stage of the competition. They're in such a strong place to build for the next few years. Emery's there. The squad's already strong. They've got the potential for European silverware. Honestly, with other teams starting to, well, Liverpool changing manager, Man United don't know what they're doing, Chelsea don't know what they're doing, Tottenham still in the midst of a rebuild, there's opportunity here for Aston Villa beyond even this final. They just got to get over the line. This feels really important to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's again, we've got to the number one spot here and we're looking at a team that everyone would have predicted to be in the number one spot. And I'm sorry to disappoint in some ways, because it would have been great here to be talking about one of these clubs as, actually, I really think they can go and dethrone Villa. And look, Villa weren't perfect. And to be perfectly honest with you, I think that they're slightly lucky to be in the competition still. But I think the Lille, as I said earlier, were the best team left that weren't Aston Villa. And so the fact that they've already got through that screams to me that maybe it's just written on the wall. And it feels a bit like West Ham last year, right? That they were going to get there. And I thought that Fiorentina could probably give them a game. And again, a better Fiorentina side last year than I think that they are this year were, you know, a good match, I thought, for West Ham in the final. And it was a very close game and there wasn't loads between the two teams. But it felt like almost at that point it was written. And I remember sitting here and thinking, oh, I really like this Ghent side. Can they do enough to hurt West Ham? As we got towards the end of this point. And I was like, I think they could, you know. And ultimately, the quality on pitch and in the dugout told in those games. And just the Emery factor elevates Aston Villa to such a high level. He's won the Europa League on various different occasions with various different clubs. He is an expert at finding game plans to get through these elements of the competition. And we are now just at a point where Villa are also the best side on paper. So not only do they have the best coach, they also have the best team on paper. They have the strongest depth. And when you get to that point, I can't see right now any other outcome than Aston Villa winning this trophy in Athens.
Yeah, I think that's very fair validation, mate. We both know an Aston Villa fan who will be hoping that your prediction there comes off. Good luck, Unai Emery, and good luck to our friend.
Yes, absolutely. Right, we will leave it there. Don't go anywhere, though, because after the break, there's a little bit of guru wisdom. Welcome back to Ranks FC for our third and final part. And Dean Jones, it's time for some
guru wisdom, guru wisdom, guru wisdom.
Yeah, nothing football related here this week. We're not picking teams for anyone or anything like that. But there is a bit of wisdom that I've stumbled across. Now, you may or may not know, Jack, that it's basically 10 weeks until we need our beach bodies ready. It's 10 weeks till July. 10 weeks.
It's all right for you. You're going to be in San Diego in July.
Well, it's not all right for me.
In London.
This is not all right for me, mate. I'm not ready for a hot boy summer. My body's not ready. and this is something that's dawned upon me. Obviously, I will be in Southern California for an entire summer, an entire year maybe of beach weather. And I'm not saying I'm massively out of shape, but by San Diego standards, I mean, could do better, is probably being kind to myself. And I thought, right, come on, it's time to motivate yourself, Dean. You've got to get fitter. You've got to look better as well. Get healthier. And the problem is, Jack, I need proper motivation when I'm working out. I need reasons or I need something to keep me going because I get bored.
I really hope there are people listening to this in the gym.
I get bored. You know, if I think of things that have motivated me for, like when I was younger, like I just had football. So I had to stay fit for football. I was playing football to keep fit. Then there has been moments like getting married, things like that. Like before my wedding, I got as pretty much as fit as I've been. Even before I had kids, I went through like a long spell of working out properly. You know, I had a workout plan. I had a trainer for a bit as well. Like I was in decent shape. That's fallen away the last four or five years. So I was like, right, I've got a new plan. I was like, still got to do this. It's at home. I'm not going to a gym. I can't be bothered. I know that even the journey from here to the gym is going to put me off. So it's got to be at home. Got all the weights and stuff at home. It's fine. But I was like, I need something to motivate me. How do I?
Next Dean.
Oh, I love a bit of that. Listen, this is what you do, people. If you're at home and you got good intentions, but you're like, oh, I just can't get in the right headspace. Here's what you do. I tried it. I've tested it. It works. You go to YouTube, you type in beach walk, and you type in the city or place of your desire, right? So I put in, for example, Mission Beach, San Diego beach walk, and you get a half hour video of amazing scenery and loads of people that are absolutely amazing in their swimwear. And if you were on that beach in that moment, you would be thinking, oh, wish I'd worked out. Well, you've got the chance. This is it. You've got the chance. You've got 10 weeks of opportunities to be on that beach via YouTube, comparing yourself, feeling bad about yourself, but knowing that you've got time to do something about it. Jack, this is working. I'm loving it. Good. I've been on some great beach walks recently. I've been in Rio de Janeiro. I've been along Ipanema Beach. I've been to Mallorca. I've been to the Algarve. I've been around San Diego. I've been a lovely time with these workouts. Put a bit of music on my phone. I get the YouTube set up with the beach walk that I want for that day. Find one that's about the right timing. And it's proper motivating because even when you're like taking a break, somebody will suddenly come onto the screen and you're thinking, ah. You're either thinking, I don't want to look like him, or I do want to look like him. I think I'm onto something. I think this might work for me, and hopefully, but this bit of wisdom might help one or two of our listeners too.
Dean's body shaming camp.
Basically. Yeah.
You're body shaming yourself. I mean, look, whatever gets you through the day, as the Lighthouse family once said, I suppose. Well, I mean, look, I'm glad it's working for you, mate. That's my that'll be my take.
I mean, I don't know the results are there yet. We're only a couple of weeks into this, but if it goes well, you'll see before and after. But no, you won't. We haven't seen any before and after pics. Don't worry. But you'll be able to tell, mate. I'll be very confident coming onto these podcasts, and you'll be sat there on our Tuesday afternoon, and I'll be sat here shirtless. On a beach.
Well, I mean, I've enjoyed my gym routine this year. I don't know why. I found a rhythm with it, which is good. But the last few weeks I've dropped off a bit because I've got a golf tournament coming up. Big thing, me and my brother run down the years. It's you know, it's just starting to get into real sort of heated moments, the two teams. It's Ryder Cup kind of style.
Yeah.
And so instead of going to the gym, I've just been playing golf loads.
Yeah.
Like, which is great, but I didn't realize quite that golf is actually quite a good shift, because you're walking a long way, especially if you have to zigzag across the course like I do, where the ball's sort of flying off in random directions.
Yes.
And I played 3 times last week. And I was like, wow, I've actually done a lot of steps. I've been putting a lot of miles on the board. So I'm hoping that maybe the downtime in gym time has been offset by wandering around courses, you know, and hitting the ground 400 times. So it's all very exciting. But yeah, I'm playing well, I'm enjoying myself. I'm getting there.
Well, that's very good, mate. Yeah. I'm off to do a different type of exercise right now. I'm taking Dylan and Reese down to the football pitch. They haven't played properly for a week or so. They're desperate to get down there. So I'm gonna stick the boots on in a minute, mate, and have a bit of run around out there.
There you go. Everyone's a winner. And on that note, I think we should probably call this a day. So all that's left for me to do, say thank you very much to my co-host, Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. Thank you so much for listening to this Ranks FC podcast. We'll be back next week with stories from our various adventures this weekend. Dean is off to Madrid, and I'm off to Naples. I'm going to see Napoli against Roma in the Derby del Sole. The Derby of the Sun in southern Italy, which is cool. My first time ever at the Maradona. So very, very excited about that. If anyone has any like mad Naples tips, then please do drop them in our DMs on Twitter or whatever. I can do my best to get around to them, but can't wait to get to Napoli. I'm very, very excited. So lots of fun to be had this weekend. Thank you so much for listening. Take it easy. Peace. Final seconds of the game. A chance to score and the chance has gone begging. If your business's commerce platform keeps missing the target on golden opportunities, get the MVP you deserve. Get Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool that you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle. Shopify puts you in control of every sales channel. So whether you're selling signed football boots from Shopify's in-person POS system or you're vending vintage shirts on Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform, you are covered. And once you've reached your audience, Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is truly a global force, powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across over 170 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ranks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ranks to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/ranks.